Hey, what's going on? This is Jeremy Thoa, Marketing Director of 3PL Systems and host of 3PL Live. I'm excited to share an interview with Parker Chaney. Parker has got an impressive following over on LinkedIn with around 10,000 followers. And we get into the story of how he started Chivalry Talent. Really crazy time for him too. He just had a baby, lost two jobs, and then decided to start his own company, a recruiting agency. So we kind of get into the story and how he dealt with the stress during that time. Super solid guy. Hope you enjoy this interview.
Yeah, so my name is Parker Chaney with Chivalry Talent, and we are a freight brokerage only recruiting company. And so what we do is only with freight brokerages. We don't do anything else. I don't know anything about your warehouse positions. I'm not getting any forklift drivers or anything like that. Everything that we do specializes in the freight brokerage. And so, gosh, for the last year and a half that I've been doing it, it's been all sales positions with a couple operations here and there. But as everybody knows, the market's pretty, if you're a sales guy, and you got to book a business, or you know how to get some trucks and get some customers, that just works best way to find new positions with great companies. And so I got into freight brokering because I wanted a sales job. And like most people, kind of just fell into it. I was working at a CNC shop. I really wanted to get into something else and didn't really know what to get into. I didn't have a degree. I didn't have any sort of professional experience other than manufacturing, which doesn't really get you anywhere. And, you know, was a team lead, really did not have any interest in doing that any longer because you can only make as much money as hours you put in. And so I really started reading any books I can on sales and learning stuff about that, because one coworker, as we're talking about it at night, working night shift, was like, I don't know what I can do and, you know, what else I can do to make money. I know I was making like $25 an hour, which seems like a lot, but the more money I made, the more I realized, like, you need to make more money. There's not a lot out there. And so he was like, well, you love talking to people and you're really funny and witty. And so I think that sales would be great for you because it's kind of natural and you could build rapport really well with people. Just try sales out, since that's the really only thing I can do that you can make more money with and you don't need a degree. And so happened to just start learning that for 6 months or so. Any book I could read and listen to while at work, I did. And gosh, I listened to so many over and over again while working night shift, and then ended up applying some places. And like most people, happened to just land at a freight brokerage, had an interview there. I actually missed my first interview, funny enough, because I was working night shift and I slept through. My alarm didn't wake me up. It was not a good situation. Matt Benz, who's awesome, and a lot of people at the company and in this industry know, he's amazing. He was like, it's all good, still come in. And he ended up giving me the job. And so that's how I landed in freight.
I've been in situations yeah. like that too, where I almost didn't want to go to an interview because I was late or whatever. And then ended up pushing through. And that's cool that you actually pushed through and ended up getting the actual gig, because I think a lot of people might give up. I would like to talk to you too about your LinkedIn for a second, because you have like a crapload of followers. It's like 9,000. I do enjoy your writing on LinkedIn. I think you have a very good tone, and it's like fun and just kind of playful, but it's also like good content as well. There's like depth to it. How did you get into the content writing, and does that help you with your business?
Getting into the content writing, so I guess we'll go back. So I started in April of last year with the business. I made my first dollars 8 months after, 8 or 9 months after I started it. So it took me a while of working every single day, which was fun. But then once I got that, I was like, okay, I've made my first check. I don't necessarily know what I'm doing. I mean, I do know what I'm doing, but like not enough to do it consistently. And so I need to learn from somebody who knows what they're doing and has done this. And like, I need to know, like, every single day, what do I do? Like, what's my day look like, my day to day? Because I didn't have any recruiting experience prior or really any business experience other than one failed social media marketing agency like everybody else has done in the last, gosh, 10 years or so. Ended up finding a coach that had a recruiting business that was $2 million. And I was like, hey, I need to learn from you. And ended up learning from him. And he was kind of like, you know, you should probably post on LinkedIn. That's always helped me a lot. I took basically like, hey, post on LinkedIn, try and build a little brand. That always helps bring in new business and customers and candidates. And so that was kind of just like, okay, let's try that. I just started looking up different ways to post on LinkedIn, what works best, how to tell stories. I mean, kind of took what he said and took it to the max, really dove into it. And so after figuring it out and posting things consistently, it's gone to what it is now and grown fairly quickly on LinkedIn. And so that's how I learned all that stuff.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm a big fan of LinkedIn and like running content. And it's fascinating to me that you can grow a business off of LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. So I'm just a little bit of a noob, I guess. I obviously know what freight brokerages are and everything, but what's the difference between like a freight agent and a freight sales rep?
So the big difference between a freight agent and like a normal freight broker, and I know there's a thousand different roles within that, but freight agent is 1099, so they're commission only. And I kind of like to explain it to people that don't 100% get it. It's like you're a franchisee of a certain company. And so there's a freight brokerage that controls, you know, they have the EMC, the insurance, the back office support. They do everything but the sales part. And then you do everything on your side. You do the sales, the operations, booking the trucks, finding the customers. You do everything. And that's what an agent does. Many people call that cradle to grave, start to finish, other than accounting and billing. That's what a freight agent does. And then like a normal W-2 freight broker, I mean, they can do sales only, they can do cradle to grave, but you know, beyond W-2, usually make a lot less in commission compared to a freight agent. You can have just operations people, you can have track and trace. There's so many different ways to put a freight brokerage together and build those out. And so that's the main difference between those two.
It seems like you got burned from the content that I was reading from you, like it passed brokerages, and like your goal is to help others steer away from some of these companies that have burned folks in the past. Is that part of your passion? And like, how did this all come about as far as like the actual business model? And you'd mentioned you weren't a recruiter before. So I'm just curious of like how like that all came to fruition.
I feel like everybody in this industry at one point or another gets burned by a freight brokerage, and integrity is not the biggest thing in this industry, which is unfortunate and kind of seems to be the trend for most companies and how things work. And like I said, I don't think there's been anybody that I've talked to that has like the first company they landed, they stay there forever at a freight brokerage. And that doesn't happen often in any industry, but let alone freight brokerage, that just is not very common. And so personally, I had worked with a couple of different companies that told you it was one way and they had all this amazing support and this amazing team and this amazing company. And then you get there and it turns out things are not that way. I guess the biggest thing that happened to me was last year, which not a lot of people know about and haven't talked about much on LinkedIn, but I'm going to, was I was laid off, gosh, March or April of last year. I believe it was April 11th, right before my son was born. He was due in August. It was actually right after my wife ended up, right after my wife quit her job to be a stay-at-home mom and get ready for the baby. And after we finally had everything, quote unquote, set up for our lives financially, and I was working from home and finally was able to have a family and start a family. That was the goal. And then that company that basically was like, yeah, let's help build this out for you. Let's do this for your family. They ended up letting me go right after I finished a 6,000 bid RFP, which took forever. I was doing that. We had a baby moon. We had a baby moon that we went on, and I was doing it on the boat in Florida for no reason whatsoever. We're just going to let you go. And a big thing that happens is companies say they'll pay you this much amount of money, and then you get a really big opportunity and they go, whoa, you know, I don't think we want to pay you all this money. And so that's kind of what I think happened and the route that it went down. And so being a soon-to-be first-time father, first-time provider, it was not fun, that feeling of like, I finally need to be the provider and the father and the spouse that I need to be for this family, and I end up failing or put that pressure on myself. And so that was just a horrible feeling. And that really fuels why we have this company. And then ended up getting another job right before he was born, 2 weeks or so before he was due. Flew there for a week. You know, my wife's due in days from now. And so it's very like stressful that she could go into labor any second now, and I got to go start this new job to provide the family. Also, while working on this business, trying to get it off the ground and figured out, because it's not fun. It's not fun not having a choice. And so I was taking calls on my breaks with the business. Things were picking up with my job. It was going well. And then one Sunday night, things were getting very busy. I don't know if you have any kids or not, but you don't get any sleep for the first year, combined with getting no sleep, having a new job, and also working on a business, and then also trying to support my wife and the baby as much as I can at night. Things were pretty stressful. One night, sitting there in bed, awake 2-3 o'clock in the morning, was like, I don't know what's going on. And I don't know if you're religious or not, but I was kind of just like, God, can you just give me a sign of what I need to do? Should I pursue this business that I'm working on? I'm getting very busy with, and, you know, should I just ignore that and push things with work and my job? Like, what do you want me to do? Like, can you give me a clear sign? And boy, should you be careful what you wish for and pray for, because that morning I get a Zoom invite at 10 a.m. and they let me go basically right then and there and said, you know, this is kind of just what we've decided to do, and asked them again, like, was there any reason? And they were just like, nope, not really reason. Just that's kind of just what we've decided to do. And so in that moment, it was like just trying to figure out everything that's going on, but I felt like this sense of like clarity and comfort. And it was just like, I wasn't freaking out, but having those conversations with my wife was not fun. And funny enough, the day that they let me go was also the day my first candidate started. And so Then I was getting paid 30 days out. And I was like, I got to do whatever I can to keep this candidate here. Like, please do not leave. Like, we'll be neck and neck with running out of money and then getting paid. And so thankfully ended up staying, and they're still there loving their job. So yeah, that's kind of how I got into everything.
Wow. That's a terrifying story. I mean, brand new newborn, you got a wife that you want to support, you father figure trying to support your family, and then kind of getting into that situation. It's like a blow to your ego too. I mean, and I love the fact that you just sort of own it, and just, I think a lot of people try to hide when they get like laid off or whatever. And it's like a stigma, I guess, but at the end of the day, it happens to so many people, and life is hard and it's not perfect, but it seems like too, like I would be very overwhelmed in that particular situation. And then you managed to navigate through that. Was there a way that you managed your stress during that time?
So by default, and I guess my usual self, I'm not one that's stressed out much, but all things considered, I mean, there's really nothing you can do about that. Like, the situation is what the situation is. And so I've always been someone who's like, worst case scenario, you know, what happens? You know, I can always go get another job. We're not going to lose the house. It's not going to take me 6 months to find a job. So I wasn't particularly stressed. I mean, obviously stressed, but like as calm as I could be, managing my wife and myself and then having a newborn. It's a fun combination for sure, especially with nothing coming in, no money at all. And then going from never being laid off to being laid off twice within 3 months or so, it's not a fun place to be. Mm-mm. So I don't know if I necessarily managed it well, but I'm usually one to just, worst case scenario, we're okay. And so I try to look at it that way. You know, you said big blow to your ego. I think that with that happening twice in a row, you know, most people would think, okay, what's wrong with me? What did I do? Am I not as good as I thought I was? The only thing that really comforted me was knowing that what other people think of me doesn't necessarily matter. It's what I think of myself and what my wife thinks of me that truly matters. And so, you know, what they had to say, what they did to me does not reflect on who I am and the person I am. I guess that really fueled me to really push and figure things out for myself and prove to them that I was a great person and a great worker and smart. And so, that's kind of how everything went down.
Wow, that's fascinating. So tell me a little bit about the business model of Chivalry Talent. Did you start off, when you started off like a year ago, when all that turmoil happened, were you still in the same business model getting freight agents, or did that evolve over time? And can you explain like just a little bit how that works and what you do exactly?
Yeah, so initially I just was like a logistics and supply chain recruiter. I think that was too wide of a net and had to figure out all these different types of positions that were coming in that way I would land, and really didn't know how to recruit for these because I've never done a position. And so really had to niche down and quickly figured out that it's a lot easier to niche down and do something that you know what you're doing. And yes, you have to turn opportunities away, which is the hardest thing to do. But knowing that, I don't have to take the time and the effort to try and figure out exactly what they need and the type of position it is and everything like that. We really have been doing just freight brokerage stuff for a while. And then since, I don't know, March or so, have been doing freight agents. And that's been going really well. It's definitely a more difficult sell for sure, because freight agents have their book of business. They've got their company. They've got to move their customers, compared to a W-2 person who, if they don't have a non-compete, they have a non-solicit. So they're not taking their customers. It's a much more difficult sell. But we do anything and everything, freight brokerage, freight agent stuff as well.
Gotcha. And I was checking out one of your LinkedIn posts, and it was really interesting, like the vetting process that you go over to look at, I guess, whether or not a brokerage is good for your agents. And you look at like their TMS, like their turnover rates, kind of all sorts of stuff. Could you kind of go into like what you're looking for as far as like what you look for in like a good brokerage?
Yeah. So the vetting process with both the W-2 side and the agent side is pretty thorough. I'm motivated by what happened with me going through a couple of brokerages that they say it's one way and you get there and it's not. I mean, you don't really do much vetting of the companies that you're interviewing for. You get in there and everything's horrible. Now I want to make sure that like every single company that we are working for, we go through every single thing that we can possibly go through. We pull up every stone and look under it, and we know every single part of it. We meet their team. We go through their TMS. I'll sit on an hour and a half, 2 hour demo of their TMS sometime. I mean, every single time with agents, unless I know what their program is, then we'll go through, we'll meet their support team, we'll meet their back office. We go about their history. We look at their MC rating. Like, we go through everything, which I never even thought about doing other than like, hey, do you guys have a CRM? We make sure we get everything figured out, from their insurance and their TMS to their support team. I mean, every single thing we can find out about them, we do. And it takes, just to like vet a company, at least like a month or two to go through that. And so after talking to 25 different companies. We've already dialed into just three that we're working with that have all been around for over 40 years and have a proven process. And so just want to make sure that every company we're working with, number one, we would go work for them personally. And then number two, if they do move companies, that they shouldn't have to ever find a different job ever again or go find a different brokerage to work for.
Fair enough. And then if you work with like three different companies, is there one reason why you would send one agent to one versus another?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So depending on the agent's book of business, their needs, their goals with their brokerage, there's different companies that would fit them better. Like maybe one company has a lot of people doing dry van and they're particularly dry van. And so like, hey, you know, maybe that wouldn't work out the most if growing your company is what you want to do. And so giving them multiple options to work with different companies, like one company has a lot of assets and that's great to help do sales. Maybe that matters to some people, maybe that doesn't. And so there's different aspects of each brokerage and each agent that can fit well together. And so to put those puzzle pieces together, wanted to make sure we give them enough options. And hopefully we try to get them to talk to, you know, every single one, because you never know, you might click with the company and really think it's amazing other than just seeing their information online. That's how we differentiate each company.
That's fair. I guess I think that sometimes it could be more of a cultural fit potentially,
mm-hmm. yep.
versus like one brokerage versus another. That makes sense. And did a lot of the brokerages, mm-hmm. when you're, I guess, onboarding them, they like let you look at their tech stack, their TMS, and then they talk to you about like their support and everything like that as well? Or like, how does that all go down?
Typically we go through everything and then I have them fill out like a 30 or 40 question form that answers most of the questions we'll have on the call, making sure when we get on the call, we can at least like get along and build some of that rapport together and are on the same page culturally and morally and everything like that.
When you're onboarding like a new freight brokerage, do you send out a 40 form question and then you're kind of looking, I guess you're just sort of interviewing them for like, you're kind of looking at them as if you were going to go, I guess, work for them yourselves, right? That sort of thing, mm-hmm. since you've been burned in the past and I'm sure you're looking for like red flags and whatnot or things that like simple commission structures, for example. So like what are some of the things that like you look out for when you're interviewing them?
Check their MC number, check the ratings on that. We check their TMS, we check their software. Like let's say you're trying to hire some salespeople, but you don't even have a CRM. Like I'll let them know, like, look, I don't need your money. I'm not going to send people there if you don't have like the simple tools and softwares that they need to support them. And so if I send you someone and you don't have like a CRM or any sort of lead scraping thing like Zoom Info, like we're not going to work with you. And I'm not going to send somebody there that you're setting up to fail, especially now. And it's extremely competitive. And if you don't have a CRM or anything like Zoom Info set up or any sort of system like that, like we just can't work together. And until you get that figured out, like, let me know if you do, but we're not going to work together. I mean, I've had a lot of companies and have a friend that works at Zoom Info that I've sent a lot of contracts that got set up with. But I think that's an even bigger thing for companies. They get on the phone call with me and they just assume that I'm going to say yes because, you know, I want to make money. But that's not the case. We turn away more business than we take on. It's also, I think, a really big like trust factor where if I won't work with somebody because I don't have certain software set up for them or certain things in place, that really makes it like, okay, this guy really knows what he's doing. He really understands everything. It's worked out really well. But yeah, we don't work with most companies.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much of this you could disclose, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want, but how do you make your money with an agent model since they're like commission only?
Without going into too much detail, depending on their book of business, we charge a client differently, a little different than W-2, because W-2 is straightforward with their salary. You know, it's a percentage of the salary, pretty industry standard.
And then what about as far as like commission splits in the industry? What's like the average? I remember like back in the day, I actually worked as a 1099. I guess I was an agent because I was a 1099 sales rep at a freight brokerage like years ago, like 15 years ago. And my split was like 50% commission that I would get. And then the company would get 50%. There was some other caveats, like on the company needed to make like 10% margin. Like, so for example, mm-hmm. if like it was like a $5,000 load, the company would need to make at least $500. And sometimes there wasn't really that much profit in the load if it was like a truckload, for example. So I couldn't really do things like that. Is that kind of typical? Or I've seen some of them as high as like 70%. So I don't know, like what's like the average now?
If you don't have any experience and the company has to like train you, or let's say you have some experience, but you've never been an agent like that, it really depends. If you're 1099, I've seen 50%. I've seen 60. What we do is like 60 to 80%. And 80% obviously depends on like, okay, you've got a book of business that's probably over $10 million. You've probably got a couple support people or employees that you can get that 80% with. And so it's usually with the companies we work with 60 to 80%, but I've seen everything, but on average 70 is probably industry standard.
My uncle is actually a freight agent. He crushes it. I mean, he's He works his ass off though. Like I see a lot of reps that don't like cold call. He like literally pounds streets and he's like 60. Like he's been doing it for like years and making several hundred thousand dollars, like probably $300,000 a year for years. But he works his ass off. He goes like diligently, like all day, like just knocking on doors and just has like a big book of business. Like, what are you seeing from like the reps that are just super successful versus like the reps that are just kind of average?
I think something that not everybody has these days is, what does he say to your, is your uncle that's the freight agent?
Yeah, my uncle. He's been in the industry for like 20, 30, or actually probably 40 years now.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I think a big thing would be like always pounding the phones and like always getting new business and bringing on new business because you never know if something's going to fizzle out. But I think the ones that are most successful do that. But then also they take the time to, okay, like which part of this job do I not enjoy doing the most? Which part is revenue producing that I can still do? And, you know, what can I outsource to somebody else to help on the operational side and get some of that time back? And so a big thing would be finding someone who can do the stuff you don't enjoy. And if you spend more time doing the stuff you do enjoy, you're going to get your time back, number one. And number two, you can do the stuff that you enjoy. And so your business is going to grow probably automatically because you're doing the stuff that you enjoy, not the stuff that you hate. People that outsource for sure and bring somebody in to help them support definitely do the best, I would say.
That's totally fair. My uncle has like an assistant. And I know that when I first started in the business too, like I made sure to like have operations do a lot of my work. And I knew that I was the company I worked for, you could send people to operations, which was a little bit harder because like they weren't going to get the same level of service necessarily if they dealt with me directly. But at the same time, like it allowed you to go out and get other business at the same time. So there, I guess there's that level of like control that people have. Some people like to do all their own like operations, but I guess it kind of depends on the company too, right? So the companies that are, do they expect you to do all the operations if you're doing the freight agents, or is it different per company?
So right now we're only doing like, I think it's called operating freight agent. There's sales and then operating freight agent, both 1099. Sales agent would be someone who just brings on customers and has the internal company or somebody else run it. And they get a percentage of that, but we don't do any of that. We do operating agents who do cradle to grave, start to finish, everything but the accounting and the billing and the stuff like that, that the freight brokerage would do for them. And so that's how that kind of works.
Gotcha. And then let's talk a little bit about like selling for your company as an organization and as a founder entrepreneur. I've seen a lot of terrible sales tactics on LinkedIn. And like, honestly, like I don't even look at my LinkedIn messages as much as I should anymore, just because half the time it's just like pitch slaps, which I get it. Like we all need to, I agree with you. We all need to sell and we're all selling ourselves, whether it's to our, you know, fiance, wife, whatever, girlfriend,
right.
Business. But to some sort of degree, I feel like their strategies in general, like it's kind of distasteful for some reason. And I'm not talking crap or anything like that, but I'm just like wondering,
no,
you're good at it. I know that you are based Thank upon you. Like your tone and you're building a brand for yourself, but like, how do you explain people like how to be better at selling as far as being not being so pushy, maybe like having a little bit more tact when you're DMing people or like doing a little bit of research or whatever it may be?
Mm-hmm. So the biggest thing for me was starting and the brand, I guess, if you will, and posting, at least talking about what we're doing and try to give a little glimpse of what we are and who we are and what we're doing. And I think that a lot of the sale, I think, I forget who said it, but like 75% of the sale comes before the call. With that, having that brand, and I'm not saying everybody needs to go build a personal brand or anything like that, but like at least being somewhat out there known and, you know, posting every once in a while helps so much that people know who you are, get on calls with people and they've seen your stuff. They know a little bit about you. You can have a little bit of trust and authority with them when you get on the call or talking to them in the DMs is huge. And so that's been a great thing. And I don't think I'm the greatest salesman. Really, when I get on these calls, it's not like a sales call. It's kind of like, okay, are we going to work well together? You know, does it make sense? Do things align? Do we want to work with you per se more than do they want to work with us? And so not being spammy and not going out and DMing people like straight up like, hey, like here's this, you know, 3-4 paragraphs long message, you know, you want to, here's my calendar link, book a call with me. Like nobody likes that. If you're going to do any sort of outreach on LinkedIn, you need to build that relationship first. And that comes one, posting and branding, but also like just have a normal conversation. You don't need to pitch slap everybody. And if you're going to pitch slap them, spend the money on an in-mail. Okay. Everybody knows that's what in-mails are for. Do it on an in-mail. Nobody likes getting an in-mail, something that looks like an in-mail, and the DMs as soon as they message you. And so those are very annoying. If somebody asks you to stop messaging them, please stop, because I remove like 4 or 5 people a day at least that just could keep messaging me. That's a huge thing. And then another big thing that helped a lot when I was starting was setting personalized videos where, gosh, I would be sitting downstairs with my son on the couch. I just record a quick video and shoot it over to somebody. And like, oh, this is amazing. This is great. Like, nobody's ever done this before. So anything you can do to differentiate yourself, like sending personalized videos, do that. Just don't, I understand cold calling and emailing works, but especially in a market like this, no matter what industry, you got to be able to differentiate yourself somehow.
Yeah, that's totally fair. So how do you recommend, I like the video idea. And I think it's, if it's personalized, maybe on their LinkedIn page, or you took like the minute or two to actually read the thing. I think the problem is that people are just going a little too fast because they're thinking that quantity over quality type of thing. And it's probably not their fault too. It's some of the times that the people that are actually like W-2 are the people that have to like hit some sort of metrics, and they're probably scared because they want to make sure that they're hitting all these metrics. So they're kind of pushed to do things that are like not necessarily like the smartest way of doing things. Spray and pray is like never really a good or strategic way of like selling, in my opinion. But like, how do you, like, if you aren't doing like a video, like what sort of message do you like just say, like, hey, I just wanted to, like, if you're sending a DM like on LinkedIn, you just like introduce yourself, or do you like, how do you go about it, I guess? Cause I don't know. I'm like sensitive when it comes to this stuff as far as like selling. Cause, but I, at the same time, I want to like learn from like other people, like how, what works for them.
If I'm just going to cold DM somebody, usually I'll just start a conversation, whether it's about the industry or anything else. Maybe I saw something on their LinkedIn, a post that they said, I can message them about that and then start the conversation. And if it does keep on going along, I don't want to be like, hey, you know, here's the pitch. But if I do something where I'm like, not straight to the point, but after talking a couple of times, be like, hey, you know, full transparency, this is kind of what we do. This is what we're doing. This is why I message you, before you get like 3-4 days of talking to them in, and then like, then you pitch them. And so I think being honest up front, but also like your first message isn't a pitch slap, and like nobody likes that. And so you need to build a little bit of relationship and rapport first before pitch slapping someone on LinkedIn. And it's gotten so bad these days. And so that's huge. But then also, like, before that, with me posting on LinkedIn, I comment on a lot of people's stuff. I meet a lot of people. I network a lot of people. So referrals are pretty big. I get a lot of those. And then also, if that person has interacted with you before, they've seen your post probably for a couple of weeks now, they've seen your comments, they know who you are. It's not like a completely random DM because you've been connected with them just for a day and then message them. And so that's, I guess that would be the strategy that I would say to do.
I always view, like, if you could treat someone like, I don't know, family is not like necessarily the right word, but not so much like a transaction, more like a relationship. Like, how do you like go about doing that, as far as like, do you do that with your clients, as far as like kind of just looking out for their best interest? And do you feel that I just feel like so much of the world now is so transactional that I don't know, I always like try to be more relationship based. And I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Most of my clients, I mean, all of them really, I have worked for months and don't necessarily always bring on new ones. But I know that, I guess, having your ideal client profile, if you will, dialed in to like, what's the type of client you want to have? What type of relationship do you want to have with them? All that sort of stuff. You need to really dial that in, and was very helpful with bringing on new clients. And so you can tell pretty quickly based on that if you want to work with them or if you don't. And so I understand transactional relationships are there, and those happen. That's okay. But that's just not the kind of relationships I wanted to have with my clients. Like, I want to know about your family. I want to know what's going on. If you're going on vacation, like, you can call me anytime. I want to know everything. Like, I want to enjoy working with you. I want you to enjoy working with me. I want us to trust each other a big from the get-go. And I fired a lot of clients and not brought on a lot of clients because just didn't feel that could be like that with our relationship. And so the big thing, you know, I've turned away business from a couple billion-dollar companies multiple times just because it just didn't feel right. That would be a big thing, just making sure you know who it is, the type of person you want to work with, and the type of company you want to work with, and the relationship you want to have with them before bringing on a bunch of clients and doing everything transactionally, if you will.
If you were to start over again, like if you knew what you knew now, like a year ago, would you do anything differently, or would you kind of kept the same?
I would definitely niche down immediately. That was probably the biggest thing that helped, and then start posting on LinkedIn. It probably would have taken me 8 months to make my first dollar. So definitely niche down, specialize early. You can generalize later once you've got 100 employees. And so niching down was probably the biggest.
That's so interesting too, because I feel like some people get scared that they're going to niche too far down. Do you have any advice for that, as far as like, is there too far to go? I guess if you're not making money, that would probably be your way you're not the right.
Yeah. For me, like, you can't really get any more niche down than freight brokerage within this industry, in some terms, if you will. But I think the biggest struggle with people niching down is they can't say no to something because there's an opportunity. And so that's the biggest hurdle, is going over that. But when you tell somebody like, hey, I'm not going to work with you, we only work with this type of company that has this type of position, or, you know, we only move these certain type of trucks, and that's what we do, that's what our bread and butter, that's all we know, And, you know, we're experts at that. That helps so much more, and that helps your sales. You make more money that way. You can charge more that way. It helps so much more than being a generalist, and nobody necessarily cares. Like, you could be the best freight broker, recruiter, whoever in the world, but if you're generalized, you don't really have any say in anything. You don't have any pull one way or the other, if that makes sense.
That's fair. Last couple of questions for you. Like, these agents that are going out and looking for, I guess, a home, if you will, are they looking for, like, I know they're looking for culture fit, some sort of commission split, but do they care about training at all? Like, as far as, or are they already kind of just like they're on their way and they're already making a bunch of bank and they don't really need training at that point?
Yeah, so it really depends on the agent, but let's just say you've got a book of business doing like 40,000 or so a month in gross profit. And I say that because I knew what I was doing, and that's what I was doing when I was brokering. And so that's at the point where you either need to hire more people or you need to figure something else out, because you're as busy. You're working 60, 80 hours a week. You're struggling and growing the business and figuring that out. The companies we work with do support them, helping hire people and build your team out and outsource some things and take things off their plate. And so that's probably a big thing that I've seen now, but also somewhere that has the track record to support them in the agents, so they can be somewhere long-term, and it's not a company that's going to screw them over in a couple of years, a couple of months or whatever. And so really somewhere where our biggest goal is to have them where they can get in there and never have to go find another brokerage to partner with ever again and retire there if they want to and grow their business.
That's fair. And then how did you know, I guess, to like, just for like people that are starting out their own businesses, entrepreneurship, I love entrepreneurship. How did you know like you were on the right path before, you know, as far as like it took you 8 or 9 months to earn your first dollar, which is actually not bad, but it's also kind of terrifying, I guess, not knowing if like you're on the right path or whatever. So was there any signs like along the way, or how did you know to keep going?
I guess there wasn't really any signs like, hey, this is working, this makes sense. I mean, other than getting responses on emails and having some calls booked. I think I was also selling freight brokerage before. And so if anybody sold that, you know, it is not fun per se, a very difficult sale, and they're getting hit up thousands of times a day by a bunch of different reps. And so going from that to selling recruiting, it was like, oh my goodness, people respond to me. Like, you know, every 100 emails, I might get a response. Like, this is crazy compared to every 1,000 emails, you might get a response, usually negative, honestly, or you get somebody on the phone. That was like okay, I think that I might be a lot better at sales than I thought I was, but also like what you're selling could definitely does change how well or how often sales can happen and how easy it is to sell. And so that was the one thing that did happen. But other than getting paid for the first time, that was like the only thing that like, okay, this makes sense. And I feel like once I got that, everything kind of like clicked in my head and like, okay, I've got a control of this. I can figure this out. This is working. This proof of the pudding. I have actual money in the bank. And so that was the things that happened.
Okay. Last question for you. So what advice do you have for, I guess, entrepreneurs? And I even look at like agents as entrepreneurs, just entrepreneurs in general, people that are business people that are out there trying to hustle and trying to, you know, make money for their families. Like, any advice for them as far as like through your own struggles, as far as getting out there and not getting too down on yourself, or like any tips to leave the listeners?
Big thing would be for me that I told myself every day is that I can't fail if I don't quit every single day, because it took 8-9 months to get there. Every single day working on it 7 days a week, having a baby, having a full-time job, taking calls when I can, responding to emails when I can. Like, I knew that if I continued to press through and do it, no matter what happens, like, I won't fail if I don't quit. And I know it'll work out eventually if I just keep on working on it every single day, you know, get 1% better every day. So that would be probably one of the biggest things, is you don't have to be the best, but if you don't quit, it's going to work out one way or the other eventually.
That's super fair. There's some stoic quote. I don't remember the exact quote, but it's like something to the same effect. Like, just don't ever stop. No matter how slow you go, just keep going. So I love that. I think that's super cool. I appreciate the conversation, Parker. Where do we send people to learn more about Chivalry Talent and use you guys?
Yeah. So you can go to our website, www.chivalrytalent.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn. Just look up Parker Cheney. I'm the guy with purple around him. Yeah. You can find my email. It's parker@chivalrytalent.com. Those are the ways to reach out, and I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on here.
Yeah. Thanks so much for your time. And one last thing, which is pretty funny, is the first time we actually met in person, Parker, we both recognized each other's LinkedIn like pictures, but didn't actually know who we were in real life. So power of LinkedIn, right? It's interesting. Absolutely. I don't know if you remember that CIA.
Yeah, I was like, I'm the guy with purple behind him. And you're like, oh yeah, I know who you are. We've talked a couple of times. And that happened a couple of times at TIA after only posting for a couple of months. It was kind of weird. Like, okay, people recognize me because of, you know, my purple background and posting on LinkedIn. It was weird. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. Well, I appreciate the time, man. Keep up the good work. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Parker. I found it to be pretty fascinating how he kind of stayed calm during that whole turmoil of losing his gig. It sucks. I've been laid off before. It's a terrible feeling, and I really feel bad for anyone that is laid off right now. Hanging in there if you are, and always have hope. And then always, if you can start a business, that's the way to go for sure. But anyways, thanks for listening. We appreciate it and hope everyone's staying safe for the holidays. And I will catch you on the next episode. Thanks.